This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Melissa Idris and you're listening to The Property Show. It's the last Friday of the month, which means we have our monthly property legal clinic with Chris Dunn of Shure Associates. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, everyone.
So today, Chris is going to tackle some of your legal conundrums. So thank you, everyone, for writing in to property@bfm.my. Let's kick it off with this question from Julian, who wrote in. And he says, "Dear Chris, if I intend to invest in rental properties, is it wise to set up a company to purchase and manage these properties? And if so, what are the pros and cons of purchasing properties through a company?"
Okay. Hi, Julian. Thanks for your questions. I think legally, there is no real difference in buying your own individual name or setting up a company for this purpose, especially now that it is also possible to set up a company with single shareholder, single director, which means that you are the director, you are the shareholder, and you're the owner at the same time. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's no issue of control in that regard, because previously, when you talk about setting up a company, for that matter, you need two director, you know, for all intent and purposes. Therefore, you need to get another partner in, and therefore to manage another person on top of managing your investment. So that is like the first thing on the legal perspective. I think the real impact really is in the acquisition. There's two part here. Number one part is on the renter. Number two is on the acquisition when you buy the property before you rent it out. So I think the real impact is in the financing. Let's put it this way. If you talk about financing, means that you're getting a margin of loan from the bank. Let's say if you buy probably 90% or 70%, depending on how many purchase you're buying. Naturally, the difference is very simple. If you are an individual and you're acquiring residential property under your individual name. So individual residential property, therefore, you are effectively looking at a higher margin of financing compared to a company to buy a residential property, because the assumption obviously suggests that if you are setting up a company to buy a residential property, it can only be for investment purpose.
Right.
Right. So if it's for investment purpose rather than own use, in that case, the margin of financing will accordingly be reduced, because home financing is for own use. All right. So which is can give you a higher margin of acquisition at 90% perhaps. So, but if there is a case of multiple purchaser, for example. So
multiple purchaser means you have more than one person wanting to get into this rental property?
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying to you, so for example, Julian's and Friends instead of Julian alone.
Julian and Co.
Yeah. So if Julian and Friends want to buy into a property for rental purposes, proper management and all this, then using a company purchaser, setting up a company with everyone being a shareholder in it, would facilitate a possibility of actually a majority decision. Because otherwise, if Julian and Friends all put their own name in it, so in short, in order to make a decision, you need 100% to sell, to rent, to renovate, to spend, or whatever that is. But if you put it into a company which allow majority rules, right? So if you don't do any changes to the constitution, then you are effectively allowing that majority rules. Mm. So whoever the majority can make decision on the collective as a whole for the entire company. And of course, we need to highlight, remember, you say pros and cons, Julian. In this case, of course, there is a cost in maintaining a company. Right?
Oh, what Moving kind
forward,
of cost?
For example, number one, there's a setup fees, correct? There's a need for company secretary that you have to pay them every month. You have to pay audit fee every year for the filing of annual returns and everything else. So these are costs. So you're effectively looking at a 3,000 to 5,000 kind of annual cost to set up a company. So the question is that if the renter doesn't justify such costs, you probably don't want to do that.
Is there perhaps a consideration to be made that maybe if you set up a company for rental property, you're looking at buying more than one property? So having maybe a portfolio of properties.
Yes, it could be. Like I said, it depends, you know, how many rental property you want, because I don't know the scales in this matter. Of course, if it is really a business instead of a pure investment kind of thing, if you're running, let's say, 10 units, 20 units of rental properties, you're effectively running it like a business.
Mm.
Correct? So the main business of the company is to manage these, including collecting rental and whatnot. So I think it depends. What is the objective? It depends how many you want, how big you see you are, or if it's just one and whatnot, I would say that if your initial investment into the property is not a lot, don't have to set it up. You can always set it up later for this purpose. And I think there's also, I mean, legally, because I'm a lawyer, legally, I'm highlighting to you what are the differences and whatnot. But if you talk about tax treatment,
yeah,
then for individual and company in terms of rental income, as well as the profit from the eventual disposal of the property after you want to sell after a few years, are actually different. Okay, in that sense, for example, you're talking about tax treatment on the income tax level on the individual versus companies. There are different thresholds, right? And different threshold means that you can you then have to consult an expert in that to tell you how to really get the most out of the differential treatment. And as far as the real property gain tax, in that sense, for the profit that you make, if you are a company forever, there's a 5% lingering.
Wow, okay.
Okay, and of course, if you can actually show that it's actually your business, you can also convert your real property gain tax into income tax, if that is a preferred treatment that you like. Because although the percentage for income tax seems to be higher, but it was actually a profit, a tax on the profit after all the expenses and costs,
right?
But if you talk about just pure real property gain tax, it's purely on the gain and purely in relation to the property alone.
Okay.
So the company could be making big losses, but if you make money in that disposal of that single property alone, then you are subject to tax in that sense. So that's why I said the treatment for tax is also a very important consideration. And one more thing for sure, GST is no longer a concern, right?
At is this there moment, SST?
And it's I'm speculating depending how you run your business in that sense, because company wide it's more sophisticated. Though I said I would think majority is out of the scope of the SST.
I see. All right. You know, Chris, I've noticed that recently there've been a lot of companies that have been set up to run rental properties like Airbnb. So they make it their business. They buy or they manage these rental properties and they run it and they host these properties, sure, so to speak. Does that fall under this category?
Yeah, of course. Let's put it this way. There's two ways of looking at it. Number one is that are you buying under the same company and renting from the same company, or you buy through another company and you rent through another company, which means that effectively there's one company that is the property owner and one other company which is the property manager
okay,
in terms of doing that. So that everyone else need to be a little bit more cautious. If you are owner, if you are managing your own property, there's no issue. Okay, but if you are not the owner and you hold up to be a property manager, in that sense, it's actually a regulated profession right now. So it's the Board of Valuers, appraisal, estate agents, and property manager.
The BOVAP, right?
Yeah, with the PM at the back, property manager. So in that sense, it should be regulated.
I see.
So you can't hold up to be a property manager unless you are registered with this board. So I'm just asking any investor who intend to do that to exercise diligence. But if you are the same, if you're owner, you manage your own property, there's no issue.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hope we answered your question there, Julian. Thank you so much for writing in to us. Stay tuned for more with The Property Show in just a few minutes. BFM 89.9. Thanks for staying with The Property Show. I'm Melissa Idris with Chris Tan of Chur Associates. He's here with us for the monthly property legal clinic. This is a question from Tony Yao. I just bought a property in SS2 and I received a notice of assessment from Jabatan Penilaian, or JPPH, telling me that they had valued my property 27% more than what I paid. They said I could file an appeal within 21 days. The bank that gave me the loan had done a valuation of similar properties in the area and valued my house for the loan amount I received. Based on this higher valuation, it would mean I would end up paying an additional 20,000 ringgit in stamp duties. Some lawyers have advised me that the legal fees could cost more and typically decisions don't go the way of the complainant. So I've decided not to pursue this. Was I right, Chris? Did I make the right decision?
Not really, I would say. First of all, congratulations. Buying your house with a clear under market value situation.
Good job, Tony.
Correct, because in that sense, that's why the authority in assessing the stamp duty you need to pay is on a higher value. So in that sense, for a good start, I mean, let's look at it positive first before we look at what you need to deal with. I would think that, you know, you can't ask for a better confirmation that you are buying a cheaper from the rest of the market. I mean, that is like, you know, you have to change your way of thinking in first. But let's look at the fact that, you know, the notice of assessment, can you actually appeal and all this thing? The answer is that I wouldn't advise you not to pursue at all. I would advise you to pursue, right, the appeal nonetheless, and use the valuation given by the bank.
Okay, well, let's break it down a couple of things. So sure. You said that he's bought the property under market value,
right.
But the bank had already valued the property. So wouldn't the bank's valuation of the property be the market value?
We do not know. I'm just saying that in that sense, it's supported. I'm just saying that if you turn it around
right.
By looking at this, I mean,
it looks like it's undervalued.
It's confirmed, at least in the eye of the authority. Not in the eye of the bank, but in the eye of authority, is actually below value.
Mm. So usually banks get the valuation of a house by checking recent transactions, yeah?
No, they're actually engaging professional valuers in their panel, and they will look at it whether the value can be supported or not. For
right.
example, if I enter into a SPA to buy an 800,000, so the bank will then ask the valuer to check, is this 800,000? Because normally in a letter offer from the bank, the key issue is this. They will say it is either subject to my valuation that it is 800,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Or market value, whichever is lower. And that's where I grant you a margin of financing based on that value.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, surely we have a case whereby the bank is accepting the SPA value, right?
Okay.
They are not suggesting it's less, right? They are accepting it. So in that sense, so therefore your 800,000 stand, right? But now we have an issue whereby the authority is valuing your property at 1.2, for example, in that sense. So what do you do with it? Because in the collection of stamp duty is on whichever is higher.
Right.
Correct. It's on whichever is higher because this is affect the revenue of the authority.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last thing you want is that if it's not going by this, we can always transact our property at $1. Correct. And therefore the revenue for the government will be less.
Minuscule.
Right. Mm-hmm. And everyone is happily, you know, gaining that difference, you know.
Okay.
But I'm just highlighting that, you know, in this case, at least from the official point of view, it's like that, of course. But I mean, flip that aside, I'm bringing back, you know, should you pursue, because your immediate problem is, number one, you need to pay a higher stamp duty. Number two is that you have to pay a higher legal fees. Because again, the legal fees charged by the lawyer, first of all, is supposed to be guided by the price of the SPA or the market value, whichever is higher again.
Whichever is higher, of course.
So it's just like, yeah, of course. So I'm highlighting in that sense, we need to really, really understand what is your immediate impact plus your long-term gain.
Okay.
All right. Because my question to you is that your immediate impact will probably means they will cost you another 30,000 plus minus whatever. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
He reckons it's 20,000 for
the stamp duty. I'm
talking
about
but all in
cost,
all, yep,
the other
could
thing,
be about 30 odd thousand.
Something like that, I'm thinking. So if that is the answer, then I would say that, you know, pursue, if you really don't want to pay the 30,000, then my first thing to you is really go and pursue for the appeal.
Mm.
All right. So when you put the appeal in, they have to come back to you within the appeal period whether they're accepting your 800,000 price or not. All right. In that sense, but there is a few cautions, I must say. Number one is that the appeal would be delaying the stamping of the transfer document. So when they delay the stamping of the transfer document, so effectively we are looking at delaying the completion of the sales and purchase agreement. It's normally you have a 3 plus 1, 3 months plus 1 month. So if there's a delay, there's a chance that you can go into the extra 1 month, which where interest could be incurred. So further than that, not just the 30,000 we mentioned now, it could be a little bit more, right? In that sense. So, and again, it's up to the stamp duty office in that sense to assess whether they want to revalue or accept your new value. And just in case they could actually come back and say, we maintain the value. So we maintain, you still have to pay,
right?
And if you don't want to drag on the percent, because getting the 1 month interest paying part is one thing, right? Number two, right? Let's say if you pass by that month, then the seller can actually have the right to terminate the agreement. If they don't agree
so
to terminate the agreement,
you
could lose your property.
Lose your
also.
Property. Mm.
And given that now the seller also know that his property is actually valued more by the government in
would,
that
would
sense.
Would the seller know? Would the seller have to be notified?
They don't have to know, but they can know if they want to.
Right.
Correct. So I'm saying, I mean, that could
There's always a risk.
There could be a motivation to terminate in any way. So like I said, there's a lot of balance kind of thing we need to do. And because if you don't get it stamped, if you don't get it paid or whatnot, the bank will not release the money. If the bank don't release money, you can't complete the deal. All right? So, of course, even after that, they still maintain, you still have to pay and whatnot. There's still another venue to do it, which is through the civil court, the high court, to review this decision.
Okay.
I think it's a balancing act. I think Tony, for this matter, he must think, you know, in this case, am I looking in for a long run or just because these short-term things, I can't take it or whatever that is. It depends because I think, and every time when these things happen, unusual, not very common, not very common to really have this. Like I say, I wouldn't say it's common thing. I would say it's not really common. Normally, as a lawyer, when we handle this kind of cases, if we know seriously it's below market, we will already cautious. We already cautioned the buyer in that sense of saying
that this could happen.
This could happen. Okay. So be prepared to pay a higher legal fees. Be prepared to pay a higher stamp duty.
Okay.
Be prepared. If you're not happy, it could be delayed.
Should that then have been raised to the bank?
Okay. Now let's put it this way. The bank in that circumstances is also a happy person.
Yes.
Yeah, in that sense. I mean,
yeah,
it's a happy
true.
Party too. That they say, okay, fine, I'm giving you a lower loan, right, for a property who've obviously been accepted to be of higher value, especially from the authority, which means that I'm secure. Mm. Correct.
So, Chris, you know, part of the question was also that Tony mentioned his lawyer advised him that sometimes these types of decisions typically don't go the way of the complainant. You said that it's not quite common these things happen. Would you know if it typically doesn't go the way of the complainant?
Let's put it this way. We shouldn't go about, if you want to buy the story of typically, then there's a lot of things we don't do. Correct. So there's no chance of you buying an undervalued property.
That's not typical.
Correct. Yeah. So I'm saying to you is that I wouldn't say typical. I said, yeah, there's a chance that they won't change. But if you have support at this moment, I think as far as Tony is concerned, your case, there is a support from the bank valuation. So get a copy of the bank valuations and bring it in and put it in the appeal. Because you would have a case of professional valuers against the government of valuations. Mm. So I don't think you are losing out in any event. Give it a try. No harm. Right? Be prepared to face the consequence. That's it.
I hope you get your valuation sorted out, Tony. Good luck with that. But I want to say thank you so much to Chris Tan for being here and helping us address all the legal conundrums about property. You too can ask Chris, just write in to us. Our email address is property@bfm.my, or you can send us a voice note on our WhatsApp number. It's 018-789-8899. Just make sure you put the subject matter as for the property show. Chris, thank you. Till next time. Yeah. Till the next last Friday of the month.
All right. Thank you, Melissa.
I'm Melissa Idris for The Property Show on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.